methods of Vedic chant, the methods of chanting Vedic metrical and prose texts with their phonetic variations. And he's going to tell us about the wide variation within India. And some of you will be familiar with the Kerala tradition, I dare say, of Vedic chanting. And Professor Tripathi is going to tell us about other traditions as well. The whole session will be about 1.5 hours. But if people, it was advertised for 1 hour, but if people have to leave at 3 for other engagements, then don't feel embarrassed. But we will be carrying on to about for 1.5 hours.
We'll have to leave at 20 past.
That's okay. So, Professor Tripathi, over to you.
Thank you very much, Professor Gadden. First of all, the courtesy to invite me to this Center of Hindu Studies here in Oxford, and also, well, for the honor that you have given to me, and also for the short introduction to me and to the lecture. It's, in fact, we are documenting some of the Vedic chanting, the traditions of Vedic chantings which are endangered, that is, which are going to be extinct, we are afraid, very soon, because there are only very few chanters now left, very few Brahmins, because it's not a very paying job. They have to spend some 16 to about 20 years to learn these chantings, to learn the whole Sanghita, the whole collection of the particular Veda to which they belong. You see, the all Brahmin families, they belong to one of the many traditions. There are 4 Vedas, but there are, every Veda has got also different branches, so every Brahmin has to have affiliation to any one of these branches. And so usually they learn by heart the Sanghita or the collection of the mantras belonging to their shakha or their branch. But since it takes very long time, and they can use it only in ritual or for their own personal satisfaction, and which is that's why it's becoming very difficult for to get students to transmit this tradition. And so especially in Kerala, there are really very few students, and they are looking for Brahmins who could now learn this tradition, which is dwindling very fast. So we have documented that, and you will see this here. I have brought a VCD, but I just want to introduce you first to the whole subject, and so that you can understand the whole chanting then much better. And if you have any questions, then after this exposition you are free to ask them, or after having seen these visuals. I start from the very beginning. I don't know how much you know about the Vedas, so I can't take it for granted that, so I haven't left anything, so kindly don't be angry if something appears to you to be very primitive. The fourfold division of the huge corpus of the Vedic literature, I read it a little fast so that we save a little time. The fourfold division of the huge corpus of the Vedic literature in Rig, Yajus, Sama and Atharva is quite well known, not only to every student of Indology, but also to the common people having interest in Indian culture. However, it is not so well known that besides the main 4 collections or Sanghitas of the Vedic mantras and formulae, there are a few other collections too, which are closely related to these Sanghitas with only a slight variation in the language and vocabulary, and that such variant collections are known as shakhas or branches of a particular Veda. Patanjali, the great grammarian living in the 2nd century BC, who wrote a vast commentary on the aphorisms of Panini, mentions that the Rig Veda is represented in the form of 21 branches, the Yajur Veda in 101 branches, Atharva Veda in 9 branches, and the Samaveda in thousands of branches, with which he of course means the way of chanting. see Samaveda is chanting in north in a different way in south. You see, it's a tradition of music, and music can be of various types or various kinds, depending upon the region, depending upon the person also. These branches, or let us call them recensions of one single Ur text, have come into being mainly due to three reasons: ritual, textual and phonetic. And these are caused mostly by regional variations. Out of the shakhas of the Rig Veda mentioned in ancient texts, only three are available today, namely Shakalya, Ashwalayan and Kaushitaki. Of these, Shakalya is considered to be the Rig Veda, the main Rig Veda, because it has been commented upon by such authorities as Sayana and Venkat Madhav, etc. I need not tell you that the best and the first critical edition of Rig Veda, together with the commentary of Sayana on it, was published from Oxford by Max Müller. The name of the Sangita indicates that it originated in the west of Punjab. See, west of Punjab, you know. Yeah? This Punjab, Shakalya. In Pakistan, there is a city called Sialkot, and somewhere near. The name of Sangita indicates that it originated in the west of Punjab among the Aryan tribes of the Madras. This Madra, that was the name of the tribe, who had Shakal, or Shakal Kota, the fort Shakal, as their capital. The city is known today as Sialkot and lies in Pakistan. Though the people belonging to the group of Assoi are mentioned in Greek accounts of 4th century BC, that's the account of the conquest of Alexander. This tribe of Assoi, these are Ashwakas, and the Sangita belongs to them. These were the people who compiled this collection. And they were present in Punjab too, and they have been mentioned in Greek texts as having taken it up with Alexander the Great. Yet all textual evidences point towards the fact that they were inhabitants of the region east of Punjab, right up to Kurukshetra, or even the region which is known as Kurupanchal. Kurupanchal is today Uttar Pradesh, somewhere here. So here, they were originally there, and then they came down here, and the Sangita was finally compiled here. Kurupanchal. Kuru is Kurukshetra, Haryana, and Panchal is the old name of UP, Uttar Pradesh. This seems to have been once the main Sangita for the people living in Uttar Pradesh, Haryana and Punjab, and I feel that there is a strong evidence to presume that the main Brahmana text of the Rig Veda, namely the Aitareya Brahmana, is based on the Ashwalayana and not on Shakalya recension, mainly because of two reasons. Firstly, because the Aitareya Brahmana contains exposition and ritual use of 9 very important verses describing God Indra, which are collectively known as Mahanamni Riks and are a part of the Ashwalayana Sangita, but do not occur in the Shakalya text of the Rig Veda, which is supposed to be the main Rig Veda, also published from Oxford. And secondly, some of the additional mantras in the Ashwalayana refer to place names and some Hindu deities which are associated less with Punjab but more with Kurupanchal region. For example, it makes a mention of the confluence of the rivers Ganga and Yamuna, which takes place in Prayag. So that this mantra is later included in the additional mantras in Shakalya Sangita. These additional mantras, they are called Khila mantras, and they are added as appendix to the main or Shakalya Rig Veda. Sita Sita, that famous mantra, Sita Sita Sarite Yatra Sangate, the blue, where the white and blue rivers meet. Beautiful mantra. Another very strong proof of its provenance being Kurukshetra, Saraswati region, is a mention in the Shatapatha Brahmana, which undoubtedly a product of this region, Shatapatha Brahmana, Kurukshetra, Haryana, that the Rigvedic hymn containing dialogue between Pururava and Urvashi contains 15 richas, Panchadasharcham Suktam. Now it's only the Ashwalayan Sangita in which this hymn contains exactly 15 verses, whereas the number of verses in Shakalya is 18. No, 18, if I'm correct, either 18 or 19. In any case, it's more than 15. It's a little strange because Ashwalayan appears to be a little later in origin than the Shakalya and has quite a few more verses than the latter, most of which, that is Shakalya, most of which the latter has picked up and added towards the end of the text as apocryphal mantras, as Khil Adhyaya, available also separately in the form of an independent manuscript, mostly without any commentary, and this has been edited and annotated by Sheftelowitz, Apocryphon des Rigveda, perhaps you have seen this. The text, that is the Sanghita of the third Shaka of the Rigveda, is Kaushitaki. By the way, Ashwalayan is not yet printed, it's not yet published, and we are going to publish it very soon, within a month's time you'll get it. Then the third Sanghita is Kaushitaki, which is the smallest of all three. It's still in the form of manuscripts. I propose to take it up, and it will take 2-3 years at least. Not much difference, I think, but if arrangement is different, arrangement of many mantras. So the text of this Sanghita of the third Shaka, of which is called Kaushitaki, is the smallest of all three and omits a number of verses found in Ashwalayan and Shakalya. It was almost exclusively prevalent in the region of Gujarat and southern part of Rajasthan, adjoining Gujarat, which has a sizable population of the people of Gujarati origin. You know Gujarat, I think. I mean, this region. This is the region of Kaushitaki. We have collected 3 manuscripts of Kaushitaki from Gujarati families living in Banswara, the southernmost part of Rajasthan, and plan to edit the text. There is still a tradition of the oral recitation of this Sangita. We don't have any reciters of Ashwalayan, but for Kaushitaki, 2 pandits are still available who live in Banswara. You will see them very soon. There is still tradition of oral recitation of this Sangita, but it is destined to die out soon, since at present there are practically only 2 pandits of advanced age who can recite it in traditional manner. They have learnt it from their fathers, but the younger generation is not showing any interest in it. These 2 pandits also do not know the whole Sangita by heart. Only those portions which are used in domestic and Vedic ritual frequently are known to them. However, the rest they can recite by looking at the text with proper accents. The recitation technique of the Ashwalayan branch is, however, totally extinct, and no pandit exists in India who could recite it in traditional manner. The manuscripts of both these Sanghitas are rare and are found mostly in Rajasthan, in the Alwar, Jaipur region. The history of the branches of the Yajurveda is a little complex. First of all, there are 2 totally independent groups of texts, one called white and the other black Yajurveda. You know this. The Sanskrit terms are Shukla and Krishna respectively, which may also be translated as pure and mixed. As is well known to all of you, the first group of texts, that is the Shukla Yajurveda, contains only or mostly the metrical formulae or versified mantras used in various Vedic rituals, whereas the second, that is Krishna Yajurveda, contains not only verses but also their explanation as well as their application in ritual and procedure for their use in prose. To the first group belongs the Sanghita Vajasaneya, this is Shukla Yajurveda, which has 2 branches again, the Madhyandin and Karna. Madhyandin is the branch which originated in North India, most probably in the Kuru Panchal region, and is the most widely used Sangita in ritual in the whole of North India, including Haryana, Himachal, Uttar Pradesh, Mithila, Bihar, Bengal and Madhya Pradesh. The Karnavas, the name must be familiar to you from Abhijnana Shakuntalam, if you have read Shakuntala. The Karnavas originally belonged to the eastern part of Uttar Pradesh and were settled in Kannauj, Gorakhpur, Shravasti region, that is somewhere here, Varanasi, around Varanasi here. But this Karno Ashram, the whole where this drama plays Shakuntala, this is here somewhere. This is Uttarakhand now, Uttaranchal. When you come from Uttaranchal towards Uttar Pradesh, there is Karno Ashram with Malini River and all this. Kalidasa describes both Malini and Himalayas. It's near Himalayas. It's in Himalayan Valley, so to say, or at the feet of Himalaya. Yeah, this is Karnavas. They were originally from Kannauj, Gorakhpur, Shravasti region. From there, they migrated towards east. East means Orissa. You kind of Sangita you find in Orissa. And to the southernmost part of India, on the invitation of the ruling dynasties there. The Brahmins, they were always the ritual experts, they were always invited by kings living in South India and also Orissa, Gujarat, and also in Uttarakhand, that is Himalayas. So mostly these pandits, they were available in Uttar Pradesh, in the Gangetic region, and from Gangetic region, mostly from Kannauj, they went to all these Brahmins in Bengal and Orissa. They trace their origin also from Kannauj, and Brahmins living in Tamil Nadu, they also trace their origin from Kannauj, most of them. We have also inscriptions from Rajarajeshwar Chola, who while constructing the temple at Chidambaram and Brihadeeswar, he invited 300 Brahmins from North India. So there are inscriptional evidences. At present, the practitioners of the Karnava branch of Yajurveda are found almost only in Orissa and in Tamil Nadu. The best exponent of this tradition is a 96 years old Brahmin living in Ambattur near Madras. He has got 6 disciples. They are all good. The Karnavas have their own versions of Shatpatha Brahmana, which has been published in original by Ved Vidya Pratishthan in Ujjain, and with an English translation, we are publishing it, this Indira Gandhi National Center. It's a little different from the Madhyandin Shatpatha, translated by Julius Egling for the Sacred Book of the East, also here under Max Muller. The main text of the Black or Mixed Yajurveda is the Sangita of Taittiriya, which is avidly studied and put to use in all Vedic and domestic ritual, almost exclusively in Andhra Pradesh, and very widely in Maharashtra, Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, so South India. As you hear, this is the region for Taittiriyas, up to here, Ras, some in Maharashtra also, though Maharashtrians, they use Shukla Yajurveda as well. But Andhras have only Taittiriyas. It must have been very similar to this text is the Sangita of Katha or Kathak, which is now hardly in use. There are no reciters at present, but some manuscripts are available. It must have been once a widely prevalent and much used text, since Patanjali in his Mahabhashya states that everywhere in all the villages you may hear the recitation of Kat and Kalapa. Grame grame Kat Kalapa Shuyante. And although this refers to the region in and around Vidisha in central India, Madhya Pradesh, to which Patanjali belonged, the last known reciters of the Sangita some 100 years ago belonged to Tamil Nadu. And the Upanishad text belonging to this Sangita is very important, is well known. This Katha Upanishad, Nachiketa, the story of Nachiketa visiting Yama and learning about what happens to human beings after death, etc. The case of Maitraini is unfortunately also not better. The Sanghita of this Black Yajurveda originated most certainly in Gujarat, where the warrior tribe of the Maitrakas ruled from 6th to the 8th century. However, the Sanghita is much older, and Maitrakas were called so perhaps because they were followers of the Maitraini school. The text of the Sanghita exhibits a lot of originality and to a certain degree also has a different euphonic system. Its followers are found today in and around the city of Nasik in Maharashtra, only in Nasik, where one also finds the maximum number of ancillary texts belonging to this school. Though at present there is hardly anyone who may recite the Sanghita by heart, yet many priests remember by heart some portions of the texts which are used either in the Vedic sacrifices or in domestic rituals. Another Sanghita of this Yajurveda, named Kapisthal, is preserved only in one single fragmentary manuscript in the library of Sanskrit University, Varanasi, and no living tradition of the text is in existence. It is believed to have been originated in the town of Kapisthal, which means Kapisthal, the abode of monkeys, now known as Kaithal, in the state of Haryana. Haryana, so near Delhi, Haryana, you know where it is. This Kaithal, Kaithal is also, I don't see it here, somewhere. Delhi, I think it's somewhere here around here. Kaithal, it's not far from Delhi. So, three traditions of the Yajurveda are thus still alive in India, those of Madhyandin and Karna in the white, and that of Taittiriya of the black Yajurveda. They are still alive. As far as the preservation of the art of chanting and singing of the Samaveda is concerned, we are also not in a better position. We have at present the living tradition of three Samavedic Sanghitas with the marked variations in the mode of singing. The Vedic word for melody is Saman, and one and the same verse can be set and sung in different melodies, in different ragas, you can say. The way of chanting these melodies is also of four different kinds. Some are suitable for singing in a village, Gramage, some only in a forest, Aranyagan. Some are embellished with additional sounds or group of sounds not having any meaning. It is called uha. Others are innovative and improvised according to the need of the time and occasion. This is called uhiya. Three Sanghitas of Samaveda, together with their notations for variant ways of singing, are available. The Kauthuma in north and east, the Ranayaniya in coastal region of Karnataka, and Jaiminiya in Kerala and Tamil Nadu. So, this is Kerala here, and this is the region for Ranayaniya near Mangalore, Mumbai. This is Mangalore. So, this is very small, and Jaiminiyas also here in northern, not here, but here. Jaiminiyas and here Ranayaniyas. And Kauthuma is here, not Mithila. And Banaras, etc. Here no Samaveda is available. Yes, it's all no Samaveda here, no Samaveda here. The texts are not much different from one another, as barring a small percentage, all the verses have been taken from the Rigveda with no or very little variations. But the order often differs. Every Sanghita has also independent texts containing expanded musical compositions which are based on the verses of the Sanghita. Most of them are, however, still unpublished. The Jaiminiyas have perhaps inherited the oldest tradition of the text and notation, and their chants are not only highly melodious but usually also very pleasing to the ears. The Jaimini tradition of Sama chanting must have been very strong in Kerala, since even the recitation of the Vedic Sanghita in Kerala is highly influenced by it and has a musical character. It has also influenced their way of reciting Sanskrit shlokas of classical Sanskrit, and also the rendering of these verses in their dramatic performances and in the dance form of Kathakali. You might have, if you have seen some Sanskrit dramas from Kerala, you know how they recite these shlokas. This is more or less in Samavedic tradition, they do it. Unfortunately, at present, only three very old pandits are left in Kerala who can recite this text. All of them live in the village Panjal in the district of Thrissur. It's North Kerala. No young students are coming up to preserve this wonderful tradition of their region. The Shankaracharya University of Kaladi made a documentation of the Jaiminiya chanting, which is available with them. They made it some 15 years ago. This is available with the university for a little payment in the form of CDs. The pandits following the tradition of the Ranayaniya school of Samaveda mostly live around the holy town of Gokarna in the city of Honnavar. In Karnataka, I told you. Honnavar, you find out where I get it. Mangalore, it's near Mangalore. Yeah. Who has done this? This is here, exactly here where this red spot is. Yes. The cluster of there are five villages. The cluster of these villages is known as Pancha Grama. Most of these pandits function as priests for their livelihood and have clientele in adjoining region. The Ranayaniyas have not spread beyond Karnataka, but they still have some good exponents of their musical tradition, and it's not so endangered. Of Atharvaveda, no genuine tradition is available at present. Two Sanghitas of the Atharvaveda are presently available, namely Shaunaka and Paipalada. Paipalada, you know, this was formerly known as Kashmirian Atharvaveda, but in Orissa, since 1955 or so, a number of manuscripts of Paipalada Sangeeta have come up, and now many people are trying to do it. The critical edition of Paipalada is not yet published in toto. Up to 15, this Deepak Bhattacharya of Shantiniketan, he published 15. His father, Durga Mohan Bhattacharya, published the first part, the first, I think, first Kanda only. And then his son, Deepak Bhattacharya, published another 14 Kandas from Asiatic Society, Bengal. Other five Kandas, that is, Atharvaveda Sangeeta has got 20 Kandas. So 16 to 20 are very extensive, and they are almost, they make up at least 45% to 50%. Of the first half, that is, it's almost exactly the half of the amount, the later half of Atharvaveda is still to be published, of Paipalada. Arlo Griffith, if you have heard of him, in Groningen University, he's finished the critical edition of 16th Kanda for his PhD thesis, but he has not yet published it. So, number of manuscripts, as I told you. There was just one manuscript formerly in Sharda script, which was published from in Roman script and also in facsimile edition. But now, as I told you, many manuscripts are known to exist. The Atharvedins of Shaunaka chant the verses of Atharveda exactly in the manner the Rigveda is chanted. Many of the Atharvedins have previously been actually Rigvedins who have shifted over to Atharvaveda for the sake of livelihood, because there is hardly anyone who recites Atharvaveda. So many Rigvedians, they later, in the later part of their life, they become Atharvavedians. The fact that the marking of accents in the Shaunak Atharveda is almost exactly in the manner of Rigveda has also facilitated this transition. As far as Paipalada is concerned, all the accents have been lost. The Sanghita text bears no accent marks at all, and there is hardly anyone in Orissa who may know the Sanghita by heart. Fortunately for us, however, a large portion of the mantras of Paipalada are still used in domestic ritual, which necessitates the learning of these mantras by heart by the pandits or priests of Orissa, although they recite or chant it exactly in the manner of the verses of classical Sanskrit. Let us now ponder over the character of the Vedic accent. I need not point out here to the scholars like you that the Vedic accent has three varieties: the Udatta, that is literally translated pulled up or high pitch, the Anudatta, not pulled up, that is low tone, and Swarita, that which contains musical note, swara, musical note or tone. These are often equated with acute, grave and circumflex accents of the French, although they do not bear much similarity with them in articulation. It's a general opinion of the scholars that the Vedic accent has basically a musical character, has had a musical character, unlike the stress accent in Germanic languages, including English. The reasons given for this supposition is that the accented syllables does not alter or influence the character of the following syllable. We may understand it with the example of French, which has very often acute accent on the last syllable. An examination of the Latin word from which such a French word is derived shall show that in such words the stress accent was on the penultimate syllable, that is, one before the last syllable, causing loss of the last letter. This does not happen in Vedic Sanskrit, because accent is a variable. It's not, in Latin it's usually on penultimate. Classical Sanskrit, yes, but not in Vedic Sanskrit. However, it would be totally wrong to say that the Vedic main accent, the Udatta, does not exert any influence on the syllable on which it exists. In fact, much of the phenomena of guna, vriddhi and samprasaran of Sanskrit grammar, that is, strengthening of the vowel by adding A to it, that is, when E becomes A, E, A is added to it, so A, E, this gives rise to A, because A, E becomes A. So, guna of E is A, guna of U is O. Lengthening of the vowel, that is, A becoming A, or contraction of semi-vowels, contraction means Y, or Ya becoming E, that is samprasaram, Va becoming U, can be explained only due to the influence of the main accent, the udatta or acute, on a particular syllable. Take for example the case of the agentive suffix trich or tar of Panini, which forms nouns from the verbs. Whenever it is added to a root, the root syllable shows guna or its full form, because it is the vowel of the root which is accented. That's why we have forms, noun singular, like karta from Greek, karta, ganta, hota, neta from ni. However, when an accented suffix follows a root, the root is weakened and appears in a contracted form, samprasar. This is, for example, the case with all forms of past participle in Sanskrit, built with suffixes ta or tavat. Due to this, we have forms like kritam, karta, but kritam, because in tam, this a, t-a-m, ta, a is accented. So, the root becomes weakened. Kritavan, gatavan, gam, this ma becomes m, and this m gives rise to a. Gatam, neetam, hutam, from hu, hutam, hota, hutam. But on the other hand, with an unaccented infinitive suffix, tumul, we have forms like kartum, gantum, etc., because the first a is accented. The same phenomena explains the elusion of many letters at the end of a French word. However, the anticlimax of what I said previously is that the acute accent udatta, which was the most important, certainly the strongest syllabic accent in a word, has become very weak in the recitation technique of the Rigvedic Sanghita. That it is not a recent phenomena is attested by Rik Pratishakhya, which also describes the Swarita as the main accent. So it is not Udatta which is the main accent in Rigveda, it is the Swarita. The descending accent has become the ascending accent now. In fact, it ascends and descends too. It has got two tones, you'll notice it. In the contemporary recitation of the Rigveda, the Udatta is hardly noticeable, hardly audible. One has to look for it or hear for it between the depressed low tone of Anudatta and the high rising pitch of Swarita. What the Rigvedins do today is to put a grave stress accent on the Anudatta just preceding the Udatta. They do it also like this, with hand gesture. Pronounce Udatta in a normal unaccented tone without any low or high, and to raise the tone on the next syllable two notes higher than the Udatta, during which obviously the duration of the utterance of the syllable is lengthened. The tone remains at the same height and does not fall if unaccented syllables follow, so long as no Udatta occurs. So you start with Anudatta, then we go up to a normal tone, then in Swarita it again, and if no Udatta comes, then it goes like this and drops only when the next to the syllable preceding the Udatta. So the tone remains at the same height and does not fall if unaccented syllables follow, so long as no Udatta occurs. As soon as the Udatta is in view, preceded by an Anudatta, the tone immediately falls to the level of a low grave note to make room for the Udatta to follow in normal middle tone. A little different is the case with independent Swarita, which follows an Anudatta but has an Udatta immediately thereafter. Since the independent Swarita cannot be eliminated, it has a high pitch, whereas one needs to lower the pitch to make a smooth transition to the Udatta coming next. The reciter raises the tone at the Swarita syllable only up to one level and immediately comes down to the Anudatta level on the same syllable. This causes a sort of jerk in the recitation and is therefore aptly termed as kampa by Indian phoneticians. I don't know whether you understand. There is an independent Swarita. Independent Swarita comes into existence when usually it is on ya or va. Ya and ya is a combination of e and a, and va is a combination of u and a. So if u is accented, then a would be Swarita. But since u and a they coalesce, then and you have only va, so only Swarita remains. Now if Swarita is, this Swarita cannot be eliminated because it is called independent Swarita. And if an Udatta follows thereafter, what would you do? Because Udatta, before Udatta, there should be an Anudatta usually. From Swarita you have to come down immediately. For Swarita you just raise your, you have to come up, you have to raise your voice, you have to raise your pitch, but you have to also lower it down in order to make room for Udatta. Otherwise you won't hear the Udatta at all. So you do it like this. Immediately you go Swarita and then you immediately come down. That's why it is kampa. Swarita is the main accent also in the recitation of the mantras of the White Yajurveda. And what is more, it's no more a musical accent, but quite clearly a stress accent with a lot of vocal force put on it. They do it also like this. anudatta, udatta, swarupa. This is also demonstrated by hasta swar, or the movement of the right hand, which simultaneously accompanies the recitation. The hand lies horizontally at the utterance of anudatta, rises to become almost vertical when udatta occurs, and is thrown forward with force during the transition from udatta to swarupa. For the following unaccented syllable, it is swung horizontally towards left and right till an anudatta comes, like this they do it. And again, and there is no swara, so it's a swara. They recite it at the level of, they remain at the level of swarita. So it is swung horizontally towards left and right till an anudatta comes, which is followed by udatta when it goes down again. This is a mnemonic device which helps the learner remember the accent correctly. The tempo of the recitation of the metrical verses of the Yajurveda is rather fast. It's perhaps due to the reason that all of these mantras are meant to be uttered simultaneously with particular actions in the Vedic ritual, which are to be performed in quick succession. However, the Brahmana text of the Yajurveda, composed entirely in prose, except of course the verses quoted from the Sanghita, has an entirely different way of recitation. At present, there is hardly anyone in India who might know the text by heart, except for some important text pieces here and there. While chanting the memorized text pieces or while reading it out from a book, only the udatta is singled out and a heavy stress accent is put on it. They do it like this. There is no swarita, thus the Shatapatha Brahmana has only accented and non-accented syllables, only udatta and anudatta. And since the udatta syllable has a heavy accent on it, which resembles swarita of the Sanghita, and this accent is marked with horizontal line below the syllable, sorry, like this, exactly like the anudatta, some scholars have advanced the theory that all the udattas of the Rigveda and of Yajurveda have become anudattas or grave in the Shatapatha Brahmana with the passage of time, a theory which is totally untenable and is disproved by subsequent phonetical and grammatical developments. So I am coming to the end. The Samavedic reciter recites the Sanghita in a musical way, a little different from the way of the recitation of the Rigveda, that is in the form of a musical composition. But when he sings a verse set in a particular Saman, he makes use of all the notes of Indian octave and usually indicates them with his thumb, moving on the fingers and the palm. They do it like this. This musical composition does not strictly adhere to the text of the Sanghita. First of all udattas, anudattas and swaritas are ignored and replaced by appropriate musical notes. The words are broken into syllables, and the syllables belonging to two or three adjoining words may form a compact group of notes. That is, they break one word, they combine it with syllables of another word and then forms one group, something like that, for one particular note. Not only this, the phonetic value of a particular vowel is also often changed. Agne becomes ognai, A becomes I, O becomes au, and T and the conjunct letters some of the conjunct letters are simplified by inserting vowels into them. Indram is pronounced as Indaram, and so. Further, the vowels of some syllables are extended to a great length in order to accommodate a number of musical notes on it. And lastly, though the verses are mostly taken over from the Rigveda, yet sometimes a few crucial changes are made in the wordings of the verses for musical or other purposes. So, I feel that you will comprehend what I have said above better when you see here the actual recitations and hear these actual recitations of Pandits, which with the help of Pandit we are going to show you. Yes, so, yeah, please.
पाणिसंहितायां षट्त्रिंशोऽध्यायः
पाणिसंहिता ओफ शुक्लयजुर्वेद परशुराम घनपाठी 96 इयर्स
प्रपद्ये सामप्राणं प्रपद्ये चक्षुश्रोत्रं प्रपद्ये वाभोजसहोजोमयि प्राणापानौ यन्मे छिद्रं चक्षुषो हृदयस्य मनसो वातीर्णं बृहस्पतिर्मे तद्दधातु.
Can you distinguish, sorry? This Gayatri Mantra. I speak it in very soft. This was a benedictory, a collection of benedictory verses. The verses which almost every uses for Sandhya twice. This is Kaushitaki Sangita from Gujarat.
Sangayanja satya deyam
Influence the accents of other word in Sangeeta, because Sangeeta has got different accents. So if you have a udatta at the end, naturally the first syllable in the next word, if it is anudatta, it will become swarit. But when we separate it, then the next word you speak with anudatta accent. So you will remember. So and there is also one jata part where the three words are taken together and they repeat it in this individually in the forward and backward order. This is Brihaspati Sukta from 7th Manda. Brihaspati Prathamam Vacho Vadram Yatra Yatanam Dhyam Dadhana. First few mantras of the Atharvaveda Sankhya, the beginning.
Pariyanti Vishwa.
Pariyanti Vishwa.
Pariyanti Vishwa.
Pariyanti Vishwa.
Rupani Vibhrataha.
Rupani Vibhrataha.
Rupani Vibhrataha.
Rupani Vibhrataha.
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 Vachaspatir Balatesham.
Vachaspatir Balatesham.
Vachaspatir Balatesham.
Vachaspatir Balatesham.
Tanvo Adya.
Tanvo Adya.
Tanvo Adya.
Tanvo Adya.
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 Dadhatume.
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 It's confused, small child. Dadhatu, dadhatu. The same mantras, Atharvaveda. It's a young boy, very nice. See the proper accent.
Punarehi vachasapate deve namanasa saha. Vasospate niramaya mai evastu mai sharatam ihaiva bhivitanubhe artani vachyaya vachasapatarni achatu mai evastu mai sharatam upahuto vachasapate rupasaman vachasapatar vayatam Samshrutena agame mahima shrutena viradishi vidama sharasya pitaram parajanyam bhuridaisam vidamo shvasya mataram.
Aratayo nechapsatso satcho nechapsa.
Hastaswaras, the different accents that you are describing. It helps them remember the accent.
Oh.
unfortunately, most of the Yajurvedas, or many of the Yajurvedans, have forgotten the proper phonetic accent. They just remember these hand gestures, but they don't pronounce it properly. But they remember how, at that syllable the hand is to be here, or that syllable the hand was like this, or hand like that. So they denote these swaras with the help of their hand, but they don't do it. They don't pronounce them properly. It's more or less the same thing they are also doing. They master these hasta swaras, but they don't master it phonetically.
Hari Om Mao.
Is pronounced as kha, lokekhu, not lokeshu.
Oh. Amen.
one swara or one. It's another sama, another raga, same verse. Gautam, this is good. This one from Banaras. Gautam, this is not Vedic Samaveda. Setu Sam, built bridges, don't have differences. Setu Sam, which is known as Setu Sam. Setu Sam. Conquer untruth through truth. Setu Sam. Generous towards those who are miserly. This how is this is not in the text.
Amritasya na Does it mean anything that powerful means?
Just embellishment. One should conquer untruth through truth. One should conquer anger through non-anger or peaceful means, etc. This is an idea which is quite common. You find it in Mahabharata, you find it in Dhammapada. Akrodhena jayet krodham, asadhum sadhuna jayet, jayet kadaryam danena satye nali kavadinam. Dharmapada. From Buddhist. So old, the idea is true. Already sound ready. Both true faith and faithful. Banaras tradition, Banaras, Mithila, Bihar, Ekba, that region, Kautum. That's the normal standard Samaveda, Kautum Samaveda. But they are Ganas, they are different. The Sanghita is the text, and it gives the main original text. But when they convert into a song, then so many such words and so many different musical notes also come. So the musical composition is based on a verse. So verse is not is pronounced or is not recited as it is. But it's broken up in many pieces, and a whole musical composition is made out of that. Mm. It's a musical composition out of a verse. This was recorded in. In a way, the conference in Banswara. He's died now. At that time he was still alive. This in major way, this he was sitting. So 2 years ago, right? 1 year thereafter. He could also recite very well, Yajurveda. This one who is looking. Critically looking at you. Can follow like I think so. That amritam this leads to immortality. Immortality has its own meaning. This is the last one. This is the also a benediction. At the end of the horse sacrifice, Ashwamedh, the Brahmins, they bless the king, this is their blessing. They bless the whole nation. A Brahman Brahmano Brahmavarchasi Jayatam, let the Brahmins be learned
and they should be endowed with the Brahma Tejas, that is splendor, Brahminic splendor, Brahminic wisdom, full of Brahminic wisdom. A Brahman Brahmano Brahma Varchasi Jayatam, A Rashtre Rajanya, Shura Ishavyu Ativyadhi. Kshatriyas should be well versed in, should be full of valor and good shooters. Rashtre Rajanya Shura Ishavyo Ativyadhi, who can torment their foes and enemies. Rashtre Rajanya Shura Ishavyo Ativyadhi Gayatam. Dogdhi Nirmur Rodha Nagdwana Altadhi. Ashu Sakti Purandhi Yosha also, or the ladies, they should be good homemakers. Dogdhi Nirmur Rodha Nagdwana Ashu Sakti Purandhi Yosha Jishnu Ratheshtha. Let there be rains whenever we like it or whenever it is appropriate, etc. It is Ghanapat. They change the order of the words so that they can remember the accent correctly. So every time the accent changes according to the combination. Let our cows give good milk. Dobhi denu. Dobhi denu, denu, dobhi. Dodha, dodha. And combine it with the next one. This is Maharashtra. Swift horse. Horse should be swift. Ashu Sakti. Accent in Ram. Sorry. Also in Yosha. Sha. Yo is it. Uda. Yosha. There be a son born to our Yajmana. Yajmana is his client, who is so brilliant that he may speak so well, eloquently, well in assemblies. Sabheyo yuvasya yajmanasya viro jayatam. Sabheyo who is good in sabha, in assemblies. Yuva. After Viro, Ja becomes accented. When Viro is not there, Ja is not sorry. Yes, sir. Whenever we desire, Nikame, Nikame, Na, Parjanyu, Varshati. Clouds would spend rains whenever we like or whenever we need or require. Alvatyuna Vushariya Pachyanta. Our harvest should be full of grains. Alvatyuna Vushariya Pachyanta. Vushari is a plant. Withers after a few months, just really it's not a tree which lasts long. It's not very near. Seasonal. What the people have, they shouldn't lose it, and what they do not have, they should get it, acquire it. That is yoga, and the other is kshema. Yoga is to get something which you don't have, kshema is what you have, you protect and preserve. But it is preserved, you don't lose it. Yoga kshema na kalpatam. So that was it. Shubham. Shubham. Na is always unaccented. No? Nos. Nos you have Latin and French also.
Excuse me, I had just one practical question. When you actually read this one,
yeah.
How the voice go up and down if you read just yeah. The Samhita.
Yes, you see, Gni is Udatta uh-huh. And Mi becomes Swarita. Yeah? Uh-huh. And Le will also remain Swarita. Agni Mi Le. So, A would be stressed. Agni me le. Le would be on the same level. Agni me le. Puro hitami. Yajnyasya deva mrtvijam.
What I was wondering, with these lines that they put, we ordinary people, can we follow it as...
You
as
can follow it very, very well.
This is anudatta, so
yeah, this is anudatta.
And how
Gni is udatta, mi is swayata.
Okay, how do you say
Agni
it?
Mi. Agni mi.
Okay.
Agni mi le. And le would be on the same level.
Same level, okay.
Agni mi. Agni. Yeah, in Tamil Nadu, they repeat the, they don't raise the voice. What they do, they pronounce this E twice. Agni mi e le. Agni mi, then they bracket and then again pronounce another E.
Okay.
But this is wrong, but this they are style.
Okay.
They will pronounce it. Agni mi e le. Here, I think we might have marked it here, noticed it. Agni mi e le. But it should be Agni mi.
Okay.
A is stress accent, mi is musical accent.
Okay.
It's a two accents.
Mm-hmm.
Both are not musical, both are not stress.
Mm-hmm.
Agni mi e le. Purohitai. He is the, see, he is, sorry.
Yes.
Purohitai.
Okay.
Yajnyasya deva. But why is not swarita? Because immediately re comes.
Okay.
So why is udatta?
Deva
mrityujam.
Mri
is not swarita.
Okay.
Because it can be swarita only when it is originally anudatta.
Hmm.
After udatta, if anudatta follows, it becomes a swarita.
Yes.
But that anudatta, if thereafter, immediately thereafter an udatta comes, it would remain anudatta. It won't become swarita.
Okay. So my main problem is, if I am going to recite it as an ordinary person, so that I recite it correctly, so if I just follow, this is low, anudatta,
yajnyasya,
okay.
Yajnyasya. Yajnyasya
de
is down.
Down.
Yajnyasya deva mrityujam.
Okay.
Jam. This is sorry.
Yes.
Jam is.
That's right. Higher.
Yeah.
And then ho.
Then ho. Then it's a ho. Ho is
ordinary.
Ho is ordinary.
Normal.
Ho taram. Ho, not it's not anudatta. It starts with udatta.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
I told you that because it is accented. Otherwise, this is, root is hu. It becomes ho because it is udatta.
Okay. Yes.
It originally, when long ago, when the language was formed, it was udatta, and that's why this hu has become ho.
Ho. Yes, I understand.
So ho taram. Ram is also the same level.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Oh. Taram. Ratnadhatomam. Ratnadhatomam.
So and then it stays in the same level.
They stayed in the same level. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. So after the swarita, the voice stays on the same level.
Same level till an anudatta comes.
Till anudatta. Okay. Now I get it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, whenever we try to, I try to sing some of these and I don't exactly.
Ratna. Utaram ratna dhatamam. That's the today's.
At least
that's how the Rigvedic rishis, they did it.
Thank you very much.
This is today's tradition.
There's just one very small question. There was one of the middle sections, they were doing a much more horizontal movement. Was that the swarita? The
no, horizontal when
they were doing something that really moved along that axis rather than
when
that axis.
When it is on the same level, when there is neither up
it's
nor down,
right.
They would do it like this.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So they were just sort of saying, "We'll just keep it going."
Yeah.
Right. That's fine. No, that puzzled me because that was quite peculiar to that form of chanting. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very simple.
In that video of that Fritz Stahl made of this Agni Chayana thing, there you see the kids who are talking, their head is sort of moving. They move their heads, and you see that the guru is kind of moving their head. Is this like the same thing, or is this something different?
Yes. They this for the sake of practice in the beginning when they have to when they are teaching then in order to modulate different tones or voices they have to if they do it like this then it's a grave sort of thing it's a low tone it's a little hard and then it becomes softer or it becomes high pitch when they do this.
But this is also related
like this.
This is also related to the Swaritas and Udatas.
Yes, it's related. That's how the Rigvedins, they also learn. They also do it also like this. That's it. So something like this. So when they have to raise the tone, it's like this. And when you do this, then you can't raise it. That's learning practice, but later on when they become proficient, they don't do it, the children. In the beginning, the teacher has to do it, and then he forcefully does it.
Another question, yes. Is there any notation apart from the accents within the Vedas for the chanting? Is there any musical tone notation?
Notations are there, yes. The Samaveda has got different notation, and notational systems. And usually they write it with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,
right.
Seven notes. And
right.
Then with the verses also, those verses, these some ganas are not yet published. Only Kauthuma Gana Sangita, they call it, the Samaveda Sangita is a Sangita. But then there is a Gana Sangita also. So Samaveda has got 1575 or 74 sometimes verses altogether, Samaveda Sangita. It is... Purvarchik and Uttararchik, you know, about half of them are in the first part or first section, another is 700 or 800 in the next section, Uttararchik, separately numbered usually, 1, 2, 3, and numbered consecutive, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like that. So the references in Samveda, you see, 1, 225, that is in first part, 225th verse, mostly taken from Rigveda. But sometimes a little variation is there, regional variation, or sometimes they don't find a verse so suitable to their gana, so they just change it because they have to use it for a different ritual purpose. So then out of certain verses which they like or which were used in ritual, they have culled out, they have taken out, they have picked out certain verses and have made their musical compositions out of those verses. They are called Gana Sanghitas. Gana Sanghitas. And every Sanghita, like we have three Sanghitas at present, Kauthum Ranayani and Jaimini. So every Sanghita has got four Gana Sanghitas also. Four Sanghitas. They are Gramageya Gan, that is songs which can be sung among people in village. Then there are some very, very different sorts which with lot of how, etc. Mm-hmm. So, which are not pleasing perhaps to the ears of when they don't do it in residence or in villages, they do it when they are in the ashramas outside the village. They are Aranya Ganas. Yes, Aranyagana Sangita. Then there is Uhagana. Uh is imagine, to imagine. They can imagine their own, some improvise, innovation, Uhi, etc. Uh and Uhi, they call it Ushani. In Kerala, there is another name for Ushani. So they are embellishments and sometimes there are also changes of voice and some like ragas also. So a lot of improvisation is there in these two ragas, Uha and Uhiya. So do these Sangitas are not yet published. They are also not studied so properly. We know only of Samaveda Sangita and that too of only Kauthum Sangita, not Ranayani and Jaimini. Jaimini is very different. Jaimini was published from Lahore long ago by Raghuveera. It is now being published, I think, again. There are many manuscripts of Jaimini. We are trying to get those manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
And those manuscripts have a different notational system. They don't write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They write, they have letters. They have Ra, Ka, Ga, like that. And they have special meanings for this. What does this Ra means? They write it over the lines. So this Ra, and then a singer knows if Ra is there, how to sing it, etc. Quite interesting. I think we shall publish it in the next few years. They shall be published. These Ganas, Gana Sangitas, they are very, I think they, very close to their heart. They don't publish it. I don't know why don't they publish it. But they don't make it so public, and because their own, some very possessive, whosoever have it. One in Tamil Nadu, there are a lot of manuscripts in Tiruvayur, near, not far from Tanjore. But let us see whether we get them. They have promised us that we get them. In that case, we shall publish it, Devanagari, with all those notations.
Yeah. Thank you, Professor Tripathi. I think we should fold up now for this afternoon. Of course, people have to go. But thank you very much for a very interesting display of the wide range of Vedic recitation. I hadn't realized there was so much variation. I was familiar with the Kerala tradition, but not these others. So thank you very much.
No, I thank you also for this patient listening and this interaction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Professor Tripathi will be giving a short course on Sanskrit metrics and recitation. And the first one begins next Monday, a week today, in fact.